What's up? What's up? What's up? Glad you're here. Welcome to MyFi. Wherever you're at, hit subscribe and all that good stuff. And follow us on social at MyFi Podcast everywhere. On Instagram, Twitter, X, whatever it is now. All the things. Facebook, TikTok, blah, blah, blah. You follow me too at Lee T. Baker. Glad you're here. Super glad you're listening. I got a great episode with Joel Cordy today, who is the founder of Chase Bliss, a guitar effects pedal company that's based in Minneapolis. So let's get into it. All right. Glad you're here. Dude, what a great episode. You guys are going to love this. Had a killer conversation with my friend Joel Cordy. Joel's literally one of the smartest people that I probably know. I feel like I know a lot of smart people. I feel like as not a super smart person, maybe that's who I surround myself with. I don't know. As compensation. But Joel's an amazing dude. You're going to love the conversation. We talk a lot about his business. He's obviously creative. He's a musician. But he's a business owner. Chase Bliss just celebrated their 10-year anniversary, and a lot's been going on there. If you're a guitar player, you're probably familiar with their work. If not, you're still going to love this episode because we talk a lot about his culture around Chase Bliss, just in, you know, employees and the business culture, some decisions that he made along the way as a creative person to step away from his day job and start Chase Bliss and what that led to and what's next for them and all that sort of stuff. So like, it doesn't matter if you're not a musician or guitar player, if you're a creative person of any type or a creative leader, or you run a business, you're going to enjoy the conversation that I have with my friend Joel. So I want to tell you a little bit about him and then we'll jump in the conversation. He is the founder, owner, the lead designer in the beginning. He's got other engineers that work for him now that he says in the episode are smarter than him, which I find hard to believe, but I get it. Because he's a great dude. He started Chase Bliss, a guitar effects pedal company. It's based in Minneapolis and it's kind of based in Amsterdam as well. Cause they do some stuff, in Europe as well. And all around the world, you can get Chase Bliss pedals. It began in 2013. It's grown to one of the best, most innovative guitar pedal companies in the whole effects industry. Their pedals are played by Radiohead, Jason Isbell, Wilco, Freaky Rob from Kendrick Lamar's band. And Joel just happens to be one of the coolest, kindest, most brilliant, generous people that I've ever met. And I think that you're going to enjoy this conversation that I have with my friend, Joel Cordy. Joel Cordy, what's up, my friend?
Hey, buddy.
Dude, it's good to see your face, man.
Yeah, I love that there's a video component of this as well, because it seriously feels like I haven't seen you in a long time. So it probably has been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, I know we've talked on the phone, but like, I don't know that I've seen you since we hung out at NAMM when Summer NAMM was a thing like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, me and you and Kelly, I think, went out to lunch or somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was a blast. She just had a birthday, huh?
Yep. A few days ago, about a week ago. Yeah.
I think it's so cool. One of the things, like, we'll get into the pedal stuff because that's amazing. But one of the things I've always loved about Chase Bliss and about you is like, it seems like your personal life is like a part of the business. Like you don't really separate them. Like you posted about your wife's birthday on the Chase Bliss, like socials. Is that like intentional or do you like just not see the separation or is that just like, that's just what I do? Like, I just don't see a lot of businesses do that, you know?
Well, that's a really good question. When I started it, like I didn't have Instagram before I started Chase Bliss. Oh, I should also say at the top of the show here that I stutter. Sometimes I forget, like, it's like if I'm talking to you, I obviously wouldn't say this because you know this, but you know, since
we're on
the podcast, it's kind of, I don't know, for people that don't know me, I stutter. It's I like to kind of say something about it at the beginning of a show like this, just so people aren't wondering why. Essentially, I could talk about it the whole show, but I'll just say that's just how I talk, and it's fine.
Totally, absolutely.
Okay, back to the question. Okay, so when I started Chase the list, I knew Instagram was going to be important. I was not using it at the time, but I saw kind of the writing on the wall, because this was back in 2013, and I was like, this seems like it's going to be valuable for my business. And I think I didn't put too much thought into, like a lot of people, I think, rightfully so, have like a personal Instagram, and then they'll have a business Instagram. And I was just posting like pictures of my life on Instagram, and along, with all of the business stuff, and it all just seemed to be good. Like, it seemed to work out for me. And it wasn't, I want to say it wasn't intentional at the beginning, but it just seemed like people responded well to that. And I think we were like entering an era where, I think like the old, wisdom, maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago was like, no, you don't want to like add in like personal aspects to the business or the brand, because that's just not how things work. And then you started seeing it happen more and more often. And I guess I just started doing it kind of by accident. And then it just sort of, it just seemed to be a positive thing for me and for the business to kind of humanize it. And I've always just tried to be honest about stuff. And I think that served us really well. Even, things that are, embarrassing or make me look silly or unprofessional, because everybody is, it's like everyone has their, I think they just relate, to that.
Totally.
So I will say though, I do it way less now that the company is just like, there's like 20 people who work here, So, the first few years it was only me. So it felt like, it didn't feel like, it just felt natural. And, now I don't post as much personal stuff because it just seems less relevant or something, but I still do sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I just know from the beginning, like even as a customer, like I was actually searching in my emails to see if I could find my receipt, because I bought a Warp vinyl in 2014, like early, maybe like, I don't know, like March or April or something of 2014.
That sounds right.
And I had found you on Instagram, and then I found the demo videos, like the first set of demos, and where you just unabashedly just like, dude, this is what I'm doing. Like, it didn't matter the stutter, the brand. It didn't, like, it was just like, I like this guy. Like, and I was intrigued by the pedals, because I was like, I guess it makes sense now because the company's big. Maybe people don't have as much interaction, but from my introduction with the company was you. And then a single pedal, whereas now maybe people's introduction to the company is more the company, So I understand that, but I do love it. I hope you never stop, because it is like, it's just amazing. And I see you, it's like you're constantly there. You work with friends, I feel like you're friends with the people that you work with and know. I mean, I've met Zach before and a couple people that have worked there in the past and stuff, but like, I guess, like, not to jump out of this too quick, but like, that seems like another thing that either just happened because you are who you are, or was really intentional about, no, I'm going to be friends with the people that I employ and I'm just going to work in that mess. Or was it just something that was just, it's just kind of your personality? Or have you had to be more intentional about that over the years? Cause now, like you said, it was just you. Now there's like 20 something people that work at Chase Bliss, and that's like their living and their livelihood depends on it, but you still want to create a certain type of culture because of who you are and what you want to have with this business,
Yeah. I think it's all just kind of a balance, I would feel weird if I was just posting stuff about me all the time, but there is a lot. Like, we have this YouTube series called Joel Ventures, and I kind of question the utility of that.
I love it.
At this point. Thank you. but yeah, I mean, the reason I think why I even entertained the idea of something like that is because the branding of the company, again, not necessarily originally my intent is just kind of wrapped up in me and my personality. So there's just still an element of that. And there probably will be always, unless like the feedback seems to be like, you know, people are like, get no more Joel. I'll be like, all right.
Nah, that can never be the case, dude.
Yeah.
I think like even from the name, like it, people followed you from a while, you know, it has to do with your brother and you guys had such a great relationship and mm-hmm. he unfortunately, you know, passed away and everything. And that carries on. I mean, the company was personal from the beginning.
So true. Yeah. Yeah. It's deeply personal. And like, yeah. Honestly, even like some of the tougher business decisions I've had to make, I think about the name because I think like this company has my brother's name on it. And then it makes the decision clear and easy. Cause I'm like, what would my brother think about this? And I usually know what yeah. he would think. And if he wouldn't, you know, and he was a very principled, ethical person. And it's got his name on it. So I don't want to dishonor him.
Yeah. That's awesome. When, I guess when all this came about, like, do you remember what made you get into this in the first place? I mean, I think for all of us who are musicians, it's something about music, but at some point for you, it was like electronics or noises, or like there was another level of it that most of us who are just guitar players like don't have the mental capacity to understand, you know. And so somewhere along the line there was an inspiration for you where you went, I'm a little different or a little more than just a musician. I have this mind for making noises and creating these things. And I guess, did you hear a record or did you meet someone? What was the catalyst for you going, I want to be involved in effects making?
I mean, in some ways, I think from a musician standpoint, and I still kind of feel this way sometimes, and maybe I shouldn't, but like I've always kind of felt like an outsider. Like when I was in high school, I was really into sports, and I love sports. I'm really into sports, but I always really wanted to be a musician, and I wanted to play guitar, and I kind of started later than some of my friends, and they were in bands and I wasn't, but I would like always be like, you know, the fan going to the shows and really wishing I could participate in that. And it wasn't really until you know, my brother passed away where I was like, what am I waiting for? You know, I want to be in a band. I want to experience, you know, all of this. And when I was really, really early on in college where I think, you know, not, you know, this isn't unusual, but I knew I wanted to go to college, but I didn't know what I wanted to study. And I was really into recording music. I had, you know, like a little setup in my dorm room that was just such a source of pride, you know.
Yeah,
like yeah. I'm a musician, you know, and this is where I record my music and here are my songs. And
it's awesome.
And getting into, you know, some of the gear. So I would, you know, it's like you have no money and I like save up for like this little compressor and like I would just use it on everything. And just so interested in learning about the gear, you know, and like yeah. and like what I'm like, oh, like how do you get this sound that I'm hearing on a record or whatever, and started emailing the companies that I, because I had no idea. I had no experience in electronics at all. And I was like, what kind of skills or experience do you need to design this hardware? Cause that seems really interesting. The responses I got back were like, that's electrical engineering. I was like, oh, electrical engineering. Okay. And I was on the football team in college and I was friends with some guys. Actually, I was a receiver and the quarterback was in electrical engineering and we were really
nice.
Yeah, we were really tight. And I was like, dude, I think I want to do this because of, you know, all this reason. And he was also a musician. We actually almost started Chase Bliss together. Anyway, that's a whole nother story, but, I joined up on the electrical engineering program after that. Yeah.
Sorry. Well, I'm going to interrupt you because a minute ago you were like, yeah, I just like emailed these companies, dude. Like that wasn't common back. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I would have never thought that. I would have never gone like, I'm going to email these companies and go, hey, what kind of degree do I need to work at Boss or Ibanez?
Really? That seems like, dude, so like, really? Okay. No, dude, I just didn't think that was like,
I was playing guitar. Okay. I was like, I have no idea. I'll just go like to the music store and like plug in pedals until I figure out what the sound is and I'll take it home. I don't know that. To me, it was some sort of like wizardry. I just, not electronics. Like I record and I produce music every day and all that. Like, so I understand the gear. I have no idea what's going on inside of that thing. So when you would tell me stuff, or like other buddies I have that work in the industry would tell me like, well, it's because of these chips and that, I'm just like nodding along like, you know, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, because of the chips and whatnot. Yeah, yeah.
I really try not, because I even like with one of our engineers at Chase Bliss, both of our engineers are way smarter than me. And, but some of the conversations that Charlie, he's super close, friends with John Snyder at Electronic Audio Experiments. And they'll get into conversations and, you know, people will be standing around with just like, blank faces. And I'll say, you know, I only understand about 40% of what they're talking about. So, you know, I'm always like really,
true.
I really try not to, maybe a little more, but like, I really try not to use language, around others. It's like a different language, you know, it can be kind of alienating, you know, if I was talking to you about chips, on a like a really technical kind of a level, it's not that productive or fun of a conversation, you know?
Yeah. I still enjoy it. Cause you know what I'm saying? Like, I like to learn. I just, my thought process is like, how do I make that noise? I just need the pedal. And your thought process was, how do I make that noise? I want to put together a circuit. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, go to the music store, and you were like, I'm going to email the people at this company. I just think that's crazy, dude. Like only people who are wired a certain way, like would go the next level. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks.
To like,
yeah.
To figure
Thank
that
you.
Out.
Yeah.
And there's no way that you only know 40% of what they're doing, because one time you sent me I don't know. It looked like a Ghostbusters contraption. It was like a firmware updater box thing. I don't know. I don't even remember what pedal. It was like Spectre or I can't remember which one it was, but you were like, hey man, I want you to test this firmware thing. I'm gonna send you a box. Bro, open that box. I was like, I don't know what I'm
I probably didn't give you any instructions. I was like, oh, it's all pretty self-explanatory, and I was probably trying to do like a million other things. Leo figured out, he's smart.
Well, I text you and you gave me the instructions and everything. I was like, I'm gonna break this pedal. Like, and so the reason I say I know you know more than 40%, I opened the pedal and there's like layers of circuit boards in there. I'm like, bro, if I touch this wrong, I remember thinking like, should I have gloves on? Like to touch, like I had no idea what I was doing. You know what I'm saying? I know the noises, but you open the circuits, bro. You hand me a soldering iron, I'm just going to make a mess and break something. So anyway, I know you know more than 40%. I've seen the inside of the pedal.
Well, to toot the other engineer's horns a bit more, like Tom, for example, so one of the things I always ran into with those early pedals is I would use all of the space on the chip, all of the ROM, it's called. It was kind of nice sometimes because customers like, oh, could you add this feature? I'm like, I'm out of space. I can't do anything else. Like it's like when I would, it's called compiling the code. It would be like 99%, which is just, like, it's like bad practice, you know? And so that was always the case. And then Tom, when he came on board, he's like, would you like, and I was so proud of like the motherboard code that I work. And it, you know, it's good. It works. It's fine. And Tom's like, I would love a chance to like, I really want to understand everything that you did. And I would love to rewrite it and try to optimize it. And I was like, very skeptical. I was like, okay, dude, because I didn't really know him that well or his skills sure. at that point. I was very, you know, impressed with him, but he rewrote my entire motherboard code, and instead of like 99% ROM, it got it down to like 65% or something. So then Whoa. We were able to like have, and it did the same stuff. He just wrote the code in a more like elegant and optimized way.
Yeah.
Which I was like, okay, all right, Tom.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Every pedal company has its own uniqueness to it. But there's a few, and Chase Bliss included in this, are just unique to me, not just in their brand and their culture, but like it seems, and I'll ask the question this way, was there a particular thing that went like, I see a problem that I want to solve, or was it, I'm inspired to make this thing? Because I think that's how creativity starts sometimes. Like if you're an artist, you're like either I'm frustrated by something in the world and I want to make something that draws attention to it, like protest songs. You know, I think about like Rage Against the Machine or Radiohead or whatever, like great Bob Dylan, great artists like that who are just inspired by something. And then there's just people who just want to make things, you know, because they're purely inspired. It's not necessarily to combat things or solve a problem. It's just to make stuff. Did either one of those things cross your mind when you were like, I think, were you at ZVEX or at another company and you left to start Chase Bliss? What was the initial like inspiration or like drive, I guess, to go like, I've got to start my own thing?
I think that it was a lot of things. I think one of the primary things though was like, you know, when you work for another company, you don't get that total freedom, you know, to make all the decisions. And I just got to a point where I felt like, gosh, what would I do if everything was up to me, you know? And like, once that kind of gets in your head, it's tough to get out. And I started to feel, I think for me at the time, and this was 2013, I was looking around and there were so many pedal companies and so many pedals coming out. And I'm like, you know, nobody, there's a few things out there that is, you know, the digital control of analog technology, but like, I think that there's an opportunity here to explore this. And, I think that there's room for me in this industry if I just really try for it and really put the effort in and really just take a risk. And so I think that was the main thing. It was like really, really enamored with the idea of working for myself and having that freedom. And then also seeing an opportunity where I could, and I didn't have big ambitions. I was like, I just want to, this is a whole nother story, but I kind of just wanted it to be like a part-time thing. Cause I was also, back to the stuttering thing, I was planning to be a speech therapist. So I was finishing up my master's degree in speech language and hearing sciences. So I'm like, I'm going to be a speech therapist for people who stutter. And I'm going to make some cool, weird guitar pedals on the side. Yeah. And so I think I don't know, it seemed attainable to me. And then obviously it turned into more than that.
Yeah. So when you got going, obviously Warp Vinyl, the first pedal, if you're not a guitar player, it was like a chorusing effect. Super cool, super unique vibrato sort of thing too. Like it was really cool. When I saw it, I'd never seen as many knobs and switches and buttons and stuff on a, what is that? A 1590B? What's the, like that size?
Gosh, what are those called?
It's like a normal guitar.
This is embarrassing. Yeah. It's
like a normal guitar pedal
size. Something B, 125B.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. One of us should know that, but it's like a normal guitar pedal size, but it had tons of knobs and switches. And I was like, I love weird noises. I love great just riffs and stuff too. But like, I was like, that looks like something I could get lost in. And then something spawned and every single pedal seemed to be that like wonderfully complex. So at some point you went, I'm going to make more than one or two pedals. Because I remember Womb Tone was next, and then what was the third?
Gravitas.
Gravitas, yes.
The tremolo,
yep. Incredible boost pedal, too. And at some point, it went like, whoa, this is becoming bigger than just me, and you had to make a hire. You had to make a decision, like, I'm going to go. What was that season like? It's exciting, inspiring, scary, had no idea what you were doing. Like, what was that like?
Well, one of the things I learned at ZVEX was that, there's like, I really wanted to make this platform, you know, because, mm-hmm. and actually it was, I think somewhat related to, you know, one of the projects I worked at ZVEX were these, sequencers and I designed sort of the next iteration of these, it was like the Super Seek Wah, Super Seek Trem,
yep.
And Super,
yep, I remember.
Ringtone. And so
they had tons of knobs on them.
Yeah. And those pedals, like the control hardware is all the same, you know? So, mm-hmm. so it's like you can, you make that connection that like you can keep a lot of the things, like the hardware the same and save yourself a lot of headaches, like keep the layout the same. Cause that stuff's always so hard and finically. It's like, if you start from scratch every single time on a pedal, it's like, you got to figure out the exact location of like all the knobs and like the DC yeah. jack and like where the stomp switches go. And so I was kind of, I really love the idea of making a platform.
Yeah.
And not having to make those decisions with every new release and then having like the motherboard control hardware always the same. So mm-hmm. it was always the plan that I would make a line of pedals. Yeah, that was always like, it's crazy. We still use the same motherboard design and like, I can't believe it. I would have never guessed that 10 years ago. So that, you know, that's interesting. Obviously, you know, it's had a lot of different, revisions and things like that, but yeah, so I always wanted to do a lot or like a line. But I'm kind of forgetting the second part of your question. I think it was just like, when did I know that
yeah, it was like, and was it like, this is going to be your full-time thing. Like, was that, dude, I'm inspired. I'm firing on all cylinders. Or were you like, dude, this is like scary as crap. I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I'm sure there was a mix of both.
Yeah.
But I think it's like inspiring to hear that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, I started Chase Bliss in January of 2013 and, I was working, I was still doing concert. I left ZVEX as an employee, but I was the only engineer there, so I didn't want to, you know, just leave the project I was working on to just wither on the vine, because that wouldn't feel yeah. good. So I did contract work for them while I was starting Chase Bliss and was open about everything, which yeah. of course was hard to navigate, but, you know, it's always best to be honest.
Yeah.
And so I was doing that. And then, once I started to kind of wrap up my projects for ZVEX, it became clear. I was kind of hoping like, oh, well, you know, maybe when vinyl comes out, I'll be able to like make money and like do that. And it became clear to me after Warp Vinyl came out, it's like, no, this is going to take a while no matter what. So I started another engineering job after that. And that was cool, but like, and then I was also, working part-time as a speech therapist, cause I had graduated with my master's degree. And so I was doing that one day a week. And I thought in my mind that was going to be perfect. Like I was going to do that. And then I was going to work on, Chase Bliss, and then also, work as an engineer, you know, just to pay the bills and stuff.
Yeah.
But what happened is that the days that I would work as a speech therapist, I really realized during that time that like I am an introvert, and like I being in front of like one after another. So I'd see like maybe like six clients a day, and it's like intense personal work and conversations. And like, I would go home and I'd be like, oh my gosh, like I am exhausted. And like that, I feel good about what I accomplished with people, but like I certainly can't do this every day. And like, honestly, I don't think I'm cut out for this kind of work. And yeah, contrarily, then like I've never been like an early riser or whatever, but like any minute I could get to work on Wort Vinyl was like, I was having the time of my life. And like, I didn't have to respond to emails or do social media. I was just working on my idea.
Yeah.
My idea, getting to make all the decisions. And it was so fun and so rewarding. I remember waking up at like 5 a.m. just to get like 3 hours of work in before I went to my normal job. And like, just, and it just became clear to me. I was like, dude, this is your bliss, man. Like, and so I was like, okay, I'm not going to be a speech therapist. So I stopped doing that. And, if I could have, I would have just done Chase Bliss full time, but I just couldn't afford to, you know? So I worked for another, year. And then it was like early 2015 where, we were coming out with Wort Vinyl, or we, it was me, Wort Vinyl Mark. Womb Tone Mark II, and Gravitas was like all going to come out at the same time.
And it was still just you at this time.
Still just me. And I told Kelly that, or I told my wife, I'm like, I think this is the moment. This is my chance. Like if I don't do it full time right now, I never will. And I have to do it full time to actually make an attempt here. And then she was like, okay, but like you at least have to like pay yourself a little bit. Cause I wasn't paying myself from the business at all, which isn't uncommon, I don't think, but like,
sure.
So I just started paying myself. I remember I posted it on Instagram. Cause again, why wouldn't I? It was like my first check I wrote to myself, and I was like, I am going to start paying myself $600 a week. And that is going to be, and I was reading like some business books at the time that was like, you have to start paying yourself at some point, otherwise you never will. And and so I started to pay myself, and that's when I took the leap, and I haven't needed a different job since.
That's just crazy, dude. I can't imagine just the sheer, like, is there going to be enough out there? Because what you're doing is incredible, but it was so unique at the time. And I know that, like, you know, there's things that you, as a creative person, as a business person, that are just practical. You have to think about them. And I remember the price point of Chase Bliss stuff when it came out was a lot higher than some of the other boxes because of the features and the complexities, but not everybody understands that. Yeah. And you're taking a leap that people are going to go like, no, this is worth it. But it was like, it seemed like from a consumer standpoint, you know, I mentioned earlier, I bought a Wort Vinyl in 2014. It seemed like one person at a time would play it and not be scared of the complexity of it, because we're just guitar players, we're not that smart, and so like we're like not scared of like, oh, the dip switches and the MIDI and just how complicated it was. And it seemed like one, like, oh, there's endless possibilities and all this sort of stuff. And then we started seeing other people, like people we knew, playing these pedals, and I don't know, it just caught a firestorm. It may have been right at that right time. I didn't know that you weren't full time at that point. You know, I don't know that we've ever really had that conversation. Mm-hmm. Because right after that was like maybe Tonal or Spectre and Tonal Recall, some in some order and all that sort of stuff. But like, I felt like it was just exploding at that point. And it was such a unique deal. And I saw people playing them. I mean, that's a good question. Who was the coolest? Like you thought like, oh, we've made it. Not it's a terrible way to phrase it, but like,
yeah.
Oh, it's pretty dope. Like, that person has a Chase Bliss pedal on their board, or they were seen with one or whatever. Who was that person?
Gosh, I'm trying to think of like who would be like the first person. This isn't like, you know, a huge name necessarily or anything, but do you know a guy named, Mark Sabilia out of Nashville.
Yeah. He's huge on Instagram stuff. Does a lot of live looping stuff. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's really kind of exploded on Instagram lately, but he's been a professional musician for a long time.
Yeah. And he's awesome.
And I got my pedals into Chicago Music Exchange. They're actually like the first dealer. I'm so lucky that I started to work with. Yeah. I was just like blown away because I thought that was going to take years. And they ordered 4 warp vinyls and I was over the moon. But I remember I would like refresh the stock just to see if anybody would buy it on their website.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. And every I would see like 4 in stock and I was like, okay. And then maybe a week would go by and I'd be like, 3. Oh my gosh, someone bought it. And they emailed me and they were like, oh yeah, this musician on tour who was on tour came and stopped in the shop. His name's Mark Sabilia. And he bought a warp vinyl and I was just like, oh my gosh. And I remember I reached out to him and he, was playing at, this venue doesn't exist anymore in Minneapolis, but, it's called the Triple Rock. I don't know if he was headlining or opening, but, I was like, he was like, you should come to the show. And I did. And I remember the whole time just like freaking out because he had the pedal on his board that it was like going to stop working or something. I like couldn't even enjoy it. And I think he did play it on a song and he's like, yeah, it was just, you know, that was like the first, like, okay, some like working musician is, you know, and it was, you know, it's really expensive. So, you know, there was something about it that resonated with him. He liked the sound and, you know, that's a big investment for anyone to make. But that was, that was the first
time. I remember seeing when I thought, dang, Joel's like this is happening is when Ed O'Brien from Radiohead had one. And I was like, oh my gosh.
That was a moment I'll never forget. Cause I got an email from him and I'm like, always, it was like, until I met him actually in person, I kind of was like, is someone, what's that word where like someone pretends there's something. Yeah. I was like, I honestly thought until like I got, like I went to Chicago to see Radiohead and he had like a pass for me. And I went to Will Call and it wasn't until there was an envelope and I got the passes. I'm like, okay, I'm actually talking to Ed O'Brien. Like this
That's
isn't
crazy.
Yeah. But when he sent me that email, it was like, I think he was interested in Total Recall. And he also wrote some stuff about how he watched video where I was working at this camp with kids who stutter.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so it was like, it was just this really nice email, very kind and like how he was interested in a Tonal Recall and added that extra part in about stuttering. And like, I just kind of felt like this warmth because my brother was a huge Radiohead fan too. Oh. And like, that's how I remember hearing Radiohead from his room, from, you know, his bedroom and being like, who is this band? So that was like all like, and I just started crying and like, just felt like this warmth, like amazing feeling. We still we're kind of friends, you know, it's just wild.
That's crazy, dude. The things that it takes to like, I don't know, maybe you do, but like you think about the day when you were like, you know, telling your wife, like I have to, if I don't go full time now, if I don't pay myself, if I don't like go after this now, I never will. You don't think like, and it's only been 10 years, bro, which seems like a long time, but it's kind of not a long time too, mm-hmm. like for something from the ground up. And Radiohead's kind of the top of the heap when it comes to effects and guitar and things like, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I just everything you're talking about kind of brings something up for me where like, I think that, you know, a lot of people kind of frame things when they're thinking about taking a risk in their life professionally or whatever. They think about maybe they'll stick with the safe thing because it's too risky. But I think what people don't think enough about and what really helps me to make decisions is the risk of not taking the risk. You know, like if you're just going to never take a chance and never never really go after something you really care about, like, that's risky. Yeah. Like, that's a risky decision that you're making. And like, I just don't think people appreciate like that risk enough.
Yeah. Well, and think about the time frame of your life too. Like before you have kids, before like, and not that you can't after, cause I mean, I did that, but like, it's just, there's a time where you go, man, I got to jump. And you
it's
know,
harder. It's harder.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. It is. But there's a time when you go like, I mean, I had the same feeling, you know, a year or so ago, like if I don't do this now, you know, it's going to be even harder when I'm 50 something, you know, exactly. Or whatever. Like,
not that it's impossible. And maybe it's in some ways it's a little easier when you're older. Because your kids will be out of the house and stuff. But like, yeah, but I saw that because in 2015, when I went full time, my son was about 4 or 5 months old and I could see it. You know,
yeah,
it's like there is going to be a lot of rationale and reasons for me to take a safe job or something.
Oh, yeah.
And that's another thing, too, because I see people with safe jobs getting laid off all the time. And,
yeah,
you know, like, yeah. So it's like it's never going to get to be like a better. It will never be a better chance. It might not be a good chance, but it's not going to be like a better chance, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think about the last like. Since, you know, I became aware of you guys in 2014, which 9 years ago, you've gone from 3 pedals in 2016, 17, whatever it was when you were like, I'm going to go full time in this, from there to Radiohead in 10 years. And do you think, because I know y'all have done a lot of celebration, you know, you've done a lot of cool stuff over the past couple of months, you know, partnering with the brewery and, you know, releasing all these cool anniversary, limited edition things, all this sort of stuff. What's the next season look like are there goals and things? You're still obviously motivated. You don't look like you've lost a bit of your like drive to do cool things and make cool things, and your staff all seems awesome and great, and just the environment and the culture that you've created as a leader there seems awesome. What's the next 10 years look like, or what's the next step? You know, is that still something in your mind, and what does that look like?
Yeah, I think that the thing that I've been probably the most successful with is surrounding myself with people that are better than me at everything that they do. So I think the next 10 years, it's going to be, you know, I'm like the captain of the ship. So like I'm kind of keeping us afloat and like kind of steering us in a direction. But I think that it's really going to be dictated by the rest of the people that work at Chase Bliss and like what their vision is, you know, people like Knobs and Tom and Charlie and Zach, but really, really everybody, you know, I think plays a really important role in where things go. And even as I mentioned those names, I'm like, why to do that? Because like, you know, our art director, Eric, it's like he's guiding too. And like, and, you know, everyone's interest plays a part. And so I think that, it's exciting. I think it could go in a lot of different directions that will all be great. Hopefully. But I think it's these days, it's just a lot less about me, but I also really like that. I really like that, especially because I have 3 kids now, and like my focus is very much on my family and a little bit less on the business and the pedals. So so that's really nice to be able to have that support around.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to ask you just a couple more questions. One, the rebrand happened, was it 2 years ago-ish? Something
like that? Yes, yes.
A year and a half, something like that.
It was, a year and a half, Mm-hmm. It was when we launched it.
Awesome. Yeah. I thought it was awesome. I think it's beautiful. It's great. It's definitely fits. You know, it's great. I'm always curious when a company decides to rebrand, like what is the motivation? Is there just, oh, we just need a fresh look. We just need something dialed up. Or is it like, no, we learned maybe on the other, you know, side, there's now we learned something about ourselves and there's something that I want to express that's not in this current brand or whatever. What was the motivation behind you guys rebranding?
Yeah, I'll just, the only way I can really answer this is just to tell the story, you know, and yeah, I don't think this is a story I've probably ever told on a podcast or anything, but so one of my best friends is this guy named Ryan Harding, and he's the drummer in a band called Local H, and we go camping every year. He hasn't been able to go every year because sometimes he'll, you know, be like, hey, you know, I'm on a tour or whatever. Yeah. And we were out in this, it's like real camping, you know, it's like you have canoes and you know, portage and you're disconnected from technology. And we were out there and he was talking about his brother-in-law, Brent. Sorry, I'm just got a little bit of congestion thing going, so I'm gonna.
You're good, dog. You're good.
Okay. And I had met Brent a few months, maybe earlier than that, at Ryan's wedding because we were both at his wedding, and I liked him a lot, but we really didn't talk about work. We're just kind of, you know, whatever, And he's like, yeah, Brent is this marketing guy, and he made a website for me. And I was like, oh, once we get done camping, I want you to show me the website because I'm interested. And he was just saying a lot of positive, nice things about his brother-in-law. And then we get out camping. He shows me his website. I'm like, okay. Your website is way better than mine. I should talk to Brent about this. So I initially just approached him about, I was like, hey, could you help me make my website better? Because I don't know what I'm doing, you know? And he really, over a series of conversations, just convinced me. He's like, Joel, your company is so cool. Your products are great. You have this, community of supporters and, you know, people that really care about you and the brand. But he's like, everything's all over the place. He's like, nothing's consistent. You don't have, you know, the guidelines that you kind of need to have if you're going to be like a serious kind of brand. And he's like, I can help. I would love to help you with all of this, but it's going to be a thing, you know? And I was really resistant at first because I was like, oh no, I like our, you know, we're kind of a ragtag bunch of dreamers, you know? And he's like, that's no, he's like, you can still be all that stuff, but like I think it will really help you. And just like the more and more weeks, he's like, I'll help you with the website no matter what. But I think you should rebrand. And we just kept talking. And then also it's like, I always work with, I was working with, Knobs a lot. And I'd always bounce stuff off him. And I was like, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, I've been talking to this guy, Brent, and I'm thinking of, rebranding. And that's really when, cause Scott and I were working, Scott, AKA Knobs, were working together on projects. But that's when he really got interested, because I was showing him some of, you know, the concepts and idea we were thinking about. And he's like, wow, it is dawning on me how much I care about all of this. Like I really care about this, this brand and this, you know, like I would love to be a part or more of a part. And then, then we all just really started working together on it. Our art guy, Eric, who I was talking about earlier, cause that was the thing. Brent was like, you know, you need to have a designer at this point, I think. And I was like, Eric. It's Eric. Because we were working on stuff together kind of a lot back then, and he was excited and interested. So then the four of us kind of teamed up, and it was a lot of work and a lot of different is this the direction we're going to go? Is that the direction, you know, that we're going to go? And it was just, it was way more work than I thought. I thought a rebrand was just like a new logo, you know, but it's, so I've learned a lot about that whole world and I still know nothing. But I know more than I did.
I'm happy to be ignorant. I've been through that too. And I'm like, gosh, this is so much work, but thank God I have friends like you do to help me with all that sort of stuff. Cause it's like a whole deal, but I am always curious. It is what you guys did was so great. And I'm sure everybody has opinions, but I think it's been awesome. And the way that you guys have navigated, going direct, and even what I saw recently with the Bliss and Mortar idea is so wonderful. It's so smart with Eastside in East Nashville being the first one of those stores. And you guys have so much going on. I could talk to you for like 5 hours, like catching up on cool things that you guys have done. I want to ask you a question. I always ask, put people on the spot with this, your three like desert island sort of albums.
Ooh.
And I know everybody's always like, oh, I hate this question.
Yeah.
You hate it, but everybody listening loves it because they go, oh man, cool. I forgot about that record. Oh, I didn't know about that record. It's always super fun. So,
I mean, one of them for sure would be, Words of Canada, Music Has the Right to Children. That one's just, it's such a mainstay for me.
Nice.
Probably Radiohead in Rainbows. That one's nice. Just always wonderful to listen to. And then probably Casey Musgraves, Golden Hour. I just never get sick of listening to that album. I mean, those are just like three. I don't know
if
I thought about it for a day, if I would come up with different ones, but yeah.
That's awesome. I go back and forth on Radiohead records between In Rainbows. And I mean, OK Computer's amazing. Kid A's amazing. My journey was In Rainbows because I saw him on that tour. And that's the only time I've ever gotten to see him. And then I go back and forth between that and Hail to the Thief is like a sneaky, amazing record. It was like landed somewhere where I don't know. Radiohead fans don't ignore it, but that may be a record that people like in the lineage, you just kind of skip over maybe if you're talking.
Yeah.
And I think it's a dope record, but.
And live too. They're just so good. It's just Radiohead. Just
I got to see them. Hopefully see them again. Hopefully they'll do something.
Yeah, I know. They're
Smiles making another record.
It's been mysterious. Yeah. I did read some article that maybe, I don't know, who knows? We just have to hope.
You have to ask your buddy Ed next time.
That would be off limits. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I have the confidence.
I know.
Mostly just talk about our kids when we talk about stuff.
That'd be the last email. All of a sudden you get no response. Yeah. And then whatever. Dude, thanks so much for the time. This was freaking awesome.
Yeah, dude. I agree. Like, I feel like we could talk forever. So this is super, super fun.
Well, I appreciate it, bro. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for time. I know you're so busy and got so much going on, but it means a lot, and I'm sure that people enjoyed it. So appreciate you, Joel.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, man, what a great episode. Incredible conversation. If you're not following Chase Bliss, go follow him at Chase Bliss on all the social handles, just at Chase Bliss. And then chasebliss.com, you can check out the website and all that sort of stuff. Make sure to do that. Incredible company. Go check out some of the videos, demos. If you're a guitar player, you probably already know about them. If you didn't, you're welcome because they're an incredible company. I have a load of their stuff in my arsenal and on my pedal board, and I use it all the time. And so hopefully you do too, or you'll find it if you're a guitar player and you'll get some. But follow them at Chase Bliss and chasebliss.com is their website. Make sure you're following MyFi Podcast at MyFi Podcast everywhere. You can follow me as well at Lee T. Baker to keep up with everything. We got some killer episodes coming up. The episode previous to this one was with Ariel Posen, and the one that started season 2 was with my friend Lauren Spring. So go check out those episodes because they're really, really great conversations with them as well. Got a great episode coming up in a couple weeks. So stay tuned. Make sure you're following, subscribed, all that sort of stuff so you get the latest. and are always a part of the conversation here with MiFi. So thanks for sticking around. And until next time, you guys have a good one.